to another Adam Schefter podcast. The preseason is now over, and the regular season is upon us, and there is an awful lot going on in the National Football League. To get ready for week one, we'll be joined today by ESPN's new Monday night team, play-by-play man Joe Buck and analyst Troy Aikman, as they look ahead to ESPN's opening Monday night matchup, Russell Wilson and the Broncos at the Seattle Seahawks. And then we'll be joined by the offensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, a man that helped that team get to the Super Bowl last season, Brian Callahan, as he talks about some of his experiences in the past and looks ahead to the future. And of course, we are coming off an enormous week of developments in the National Football League, none any more significant than what happened in Buffalo with the release of their rookie punter, Matt Araiza. Buffalo had no choice. It was, at this time, the only option for the Buffalo Bills. There's no reason to carry a rookie punter when there is a civil lawsuit outstanding, an investigation ongoing about whether or not he is guilty of gang raping with two other teammates at San Diego State, a 17-year-old college student. Just the details of it are disgusting and enough to make anybody sick. Now, he has argued that he is innocent, that he has been slandered, and he will have a chance to argue and prove his case. But the facts of the case are disturbing, and we will see what transpires. And in the end, Buffalo is left no choice but to move on from its rookie punter. And a lot of people wondered and questioned whether Buffalo knew anything before. And the one thing I could tell you from talking to other teams around the league, multiple teams, is that none of them had any idea of this at the combine and leading up to the draft process. Now, some have claimed that they did, but in talking to a few different teams and a few different front office members, prominent front office members, one said that our investigation team is as good and competent as anyone in the National Football League. He finds out everything, and he knew nothing about this particular case with Matt Araiza. So I will lean on the words of that particular front office and the others that I spoke to about the fact that they said they had no idea that any of this had transpired last October when the Buffalo Bills used a draft pick on Matt Araiza, the punter from San Diego State. Buffalo, I think, in the end, did what it could to move on from the mess that was there in Buffalo and to handle the situation as correctly as it could at that point in time. It cut the punter that's under investigation. He can now tend to his business and try to prove what he believes is his innocence, and the Buffalo Bills get to go on without anything hanging over that particular football team. As for on the field, the big development this week came in San Francisco, where the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo reached agreement on a restructured contract that will pay him a fully guaranteed $6.5 million base salary for this upcoming season. Now, what's important to note about that restructured deal is it includes a no-trade clause and it includes a no-tag clause, meaning that after this season, the 49ers cannot use a franchise or transition tag on Jimmy Garoppolo, and he will become a free agent. And the no-trade clause gives Garoppolo final say over where he wants to spend the season, which is right now in San Francisco. But should there be a quarterback injury early in the season to a contender, you'd have to figure that the first place that they would look and think about would be San Francisco, and it would be Jimmy Garoppolo. And if that is the case, and it's a situation that's attractive enough to Jimmy Garoppolo, and that team is willing to offer enough compensation to the 49ers, so both teams have to sign off on it, then Garoppolo could be traded later this season before the NFL trade deadline. But at this time, there's not a readily apparent team that needs a quarterback that was willing to give up the necessary draft compensation. And if you think about the 49ers, they once traded a third and fourth round pick to go get Emmanuel Sanders, the wide receiver, right before the trade deadline. If there's a team out there that needs a quarterback, then they might be willing to give up something similar for Jimmy Garoppolo this season to help keep their season alive if they were to lose their particular starting quarterback for any particular reason. So really what the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo did is they gave him his freedom and they pushed the deadline for him to be traded, not until the NFL's most recent cutdown day, but to the NFL's trade deadline day. So they just kicked the can down the road and things become more easy and there might be more options available. And in the interim, they have Jimmy Garoppolo backing up Trey Lance. It is clear he is the backup. They are moving forward with Trey Lance. This gives them a quality backup, the best single backup in the entire National Football League as they get ready to open the 2022 season. And that's a valuable backup to have, as any team that lost its starting quarterback can attest in the past. The 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo did the right thing and really the only thing in the end that made the most sense for both parties. All right, we're going to have some fantasy advice at the end of this podcast, and we're going to have some fun fantasy stories to share for those having their fantasy football drafts before the regular season begins. But in the interim, we're going to begin to look ahead to one of the most significant changes that occurred during the offseason when Joe Buck and Troy Aikman left Fox after 20 years there together and moved to ESPN as ESPN's new Monday night football team, the great broadcasters, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman.
You're getting us. You're getting the fumes right now.
I always wanted to get the fumes, Joe.
We're getting cycled through the ESPN machine we've been hearing about for all years.
Yeah, well, welcome to the ESPN machine, Troy. I've been a part of it for 13 years. It's a great machine to be a part of.
You don't look too beat up.
Yeah, you know, 55 years old. I don't look as good as you, but I'm trying. Right?
We're all trying.
Some of us just succeed and some of us don't. I've been trying since I was about 8.
So, look, I want to reach out to both of you guys for a lot of reasons. But we got the season beginning, Monday night, September 12th, Denver at Seattle. How do we feel about officially making your ESPN broadcasting debut in a huge Monday night game?
Awesome. Feel awesome. It's going to be exciting. You know, I mean, the schedule's great. Week one's awesome with, be a great atmosphere there in Seattle. And Russ, of course, all he's done going back and being a part of the iconic Monday Night Football booth. Can't wait.
Yeah. And you know, we did a practice game a couple weeks ago. It was actually in Seattle, which helps kind of the whole prep stuff. But it felt great. And Troy and I think we're a little bit unsure of how it would feel, and about one series into the fake broadcast, I kind of looked at him, he looked at me and was like, okay, this we can exhale now. This is how it always has felt. And that was a great, great feeling to be able to share that, feel that, get out of there at halftime, which was the most important thing. And then and get ready for week one. We can't wait to go.
20 years together at Fox, right?
Yeah.
So what will be the biggest difference now opening this season going from Fox to ESPN? Is there anything different about your jobs as they currently are constituted?
Joe?
Yeah, there is, because and it's all good. You know, it's a new producer, new director, new sound guy in the booth, new sound guy in the truck. So many more helpful research weapons that we have that we didn't have before. I don't want to speak for Troy, but I have been blown away with the amount of support, support staff and the notes that they provide. It's just more than he and I have ever had. And so they're cutting down in some ways. And in one way, on one hand, it's kind of overwhelming. On the other, it cuts down that part of the prep. And then you can kind of just concentrate on the broadcast. But yeah, it's going to be different for us because we're listening to different voices. We're relying on new people. But as far as the viewer at home, I think it'll be the ESPN wrapping paper around Troy and Joe and what we've done together for 20 years. So it's the best of both worlds. And I, for one, I mean, I'm tired of sitting around. I can't wait to go get in that booth and get to work.
Yeah, Adam, it's been awesome. I know we're still in the honeymoon phase, but everything that we've encountered at ESPN has been first class. I mean, it's just been great. In a lot of ways, I guess Fox is more of a mom and pop type operation. So there's a lot more layers, if you will, at ESPN. But the people take a lot of pride, as you know, in the work that they do. Very buttoned up, very professional. Couldn't be more impressed with everyone that we've come in contact with. But to elaborate a little bit more on what you asked, you know, in our booth, people think of just Joe and I, but there's other support people that we bring with us. And so we have those same people. So outside of a couple of ESPN personnel, our booth is pretty much, there's a lot of comfort that comes with that, you know, and if he was working with someone else or if I was working with someone else, it would change dramatically what that looks and feels like to us. So he put it very well. You know, it's the ESPN wrapping paper around pretty much what we have been doing and with the people we've been doing it with.
How many support people are coming with you from Fox over at ESPN? How many are there altogether?
Well, I mean, Joe has his spotter. He has his, you know, he has his stats guy. And then I've got a spotter that I've been working with for the last 4 years in Dave Moulton. And he's awesome. So the frontline folks, I guess, that we interact with besides ourselves, those people. And then ESPN has a couple of people that, you know, that I got a chance to meet when I was there at the game a couple weeks ago for the rehearsal game, and they're top notch as well. So Joe said it. There's a lot coming at us. A lot of what we did really on our own, ESPN has handled, you know, so I'm amazed. I mean, we're used to doing it one way for all these years. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, hey, here you go. And we're like, well, wait a minute. You do this? And they said, oh, yeah, every week? Yeah. I was, wow, this is going to be amazing. So it's been really fun.
You know what it's like? You guys are the big, high-profile free agents who come in. So, Troy, think about what would have happened during your career if you had taken your contract to free agency, left Dallas, and landed with another franchise. You would have really figured out what this treatment was about if you had just been willing to leave the Cowboys.
Yeah, the only time I got to experience this treatment is when I broke my leg trying to run the wishbone offense at the University of Oklahoma and I transferred to UCLA.
Does it remind you of that in any kind of way?
No. Not one.
No, he got paid more back then. Yeah.
There were no NIL deals. Hell, I didn't even get a hat. You know, I mean, they didn't even give me a hat on my visit. So, you know, it was tough sledding.
And Joe's never been a free agent like this to where he could be courted.
I wasn't even a free agent. I mean, I was still signed. So Troy leaves and I'm like, hello, what just happened? I thought for sure Troy, if anything, was going to do the games on Amazon and then come be with me at Fox in the late games and then do the postseason at Fox and we would just continue on. And then the thing just kind of happened so fast that I had to then go to work to try to get out of the last year of my contract. So ESPN and Fox made some trade of a, it's not a great football game. I thought I was worth more. It's and I went to Indiana. I mean, we could have even, if it was an Indiana game, I would have had more pride than Penn State, Iowa, maybe. I don't know who's in the game, but Purdue maybe. Doesn't matter. It's not one that's memorable. I wanted like Ohio State, Michigan or something like that, but that's all I was worth.
Well, didn't Al Michaels once get traded for like Mickey Mouse or something to that effect, right?
Yeah, for a cartoon that somebody had the rights to. So these things are weird, and it's I didn't expect to have to go with kind of hat in hand to my bosses at Fox and say, look, Troy's gone. My wife Michelle's at ESPN. I think change will be good for all of us. You know, I couldn't be happier for the guys that took my spot, whether it's Joe Davis in baseball, Kevin Burkhardt, in football, get out of their way, stay with the known quantity and one of my best friends on the planet in Troy, and go kind of hit the refresh button and see what it's like elsewhere and be reinvigorated and just try to grow and get better somewhere else. That's all exciting, and that's the most important part of it.
What was it like for you to get the news of Troy leaving, and how did you get that news? Did Troy call you? Did you hear about it somebody else? What happened there to kind of spell that out?
I think Troy might have talked to me and told me. I'm fairly certain. You know, we talked at that stretch. As I said earlier today on another thing, it would be a total exaggeration to say we talked every day when that was all going on, but we talked every other day, and I was not surprised by anything. And to Troy's credit, you know, he said this earlier too, and he said, I don't know if it was the right thing to do or not, but he was very open about his contract situation with all of us in the booth, with our production group at Fox, and there were no surprises. So once the trigger was pulled, then that kind of started the countdown clock for me. And there was a finite window of time for me to get out of my deal before ESPN moved on and, you know, hired somebody else, probably Al Michaels. So there was a lot of a lot of stress involved and a lot of moving parts, and it just happened to all work out.
And here we are now, getting ready for week one. Troy, what would you say is Joe's greatest attribute as a broadcaster?
Oh, man. Great question. There's so much. I mean, for people who know the business, when they're at home and they hear Joe, there's an appreciation for how great he is. But it pales in comparison to what I think when you're actually in the booth with him, watching it. You know, there's times when, you know, we had a great truck and everything, but there's times when things get thrown at you that you're not quite prepared for. And he was seamless, flawless with it, you know, covers up a lot of my mistakes, covers up a lot of people's mistakes. There's nothing that happens within the game that he misses. I'm amazed at what he sees. I think he's the best in the business. He's a great partner. He's a, you know, and I mean that sounds like kind of a throwaway line. He's a great partner. Not everybody's a great partner. Not everybody's a great teammate. And he's a great partner because he is a great teammate, and he's not interested in shining above anyone or making anyone look bad. He understands that the better everyone looks, the better he looks, and the better our broadcast is. And that's what he does. So there's a reason why I was hopeful that I would get to continue to work with him. You know, it's been 20 years. We've done it together. It's hard to believe. I mean, the time has flown by. But with that said, there's at least for me, there's no part of me that takes any of that for granted. So when I went to ESPN, I wasn't real sure who I was going to be working with. And then there was discussion that, hey, maybe – you know, maybe Fox will be open to letting Joe out of his contract. And it went from a really exciting time for me to like the best of times for me to get to continue to work with him.
And Joe, what's the greatest thing that Troy does as an analyst?
I thought about this today. We've done a few interviews today, and I would say, I've never said this before, I didn't say this earlier today either, I think he prepares now like a play-by-play guy. And I've never put it in those terms before, but there is more information that he knows about these specific players in the work and the background efforts that he makes than I would say any analyst out there in any sport, and probably more than most play-by-play guys. And now you add that to somebody who understands the game at a high level, clearly won Super Bowls, knows what it's like to take a snap and throw passes in Super Bowls, is a Hall of Famer, has more integrity in his little finger than anybody I've ever met. He makes my job easy. And so when we were doing that preseason game, he and I left the stadium together, and I said to him, I can't tell you how many times I was standing there going, man, if I was doing this with somebody I didn't know in today's climate with social media and everything else, it would be a really unnerving situation for me. And I feel like I can handle anything that gets thrown at me in the booth, but I don't have to deal with that or worry about that. And that's because I get to continue on with somebody I really admire and enjoy being with.
You brought up today's culture, social media. What is that like for you guys to do a game? Are you aware of things that are or are not being said on social media as the game is unfolding? Do you pay any attention to that?
No, I don't. I mean, I will say I think Twitter's kind of a dying platform. Now, with that being said, I'm going to get all kinds of tweets and everything else. But, occasionally I don't do it much anymore. I used to actually, after a ball game, I would go and I'd read my replies, you know, and it was interesting because you kind of know. I mean, I find them all pretty funny, but then if you really evaluate your performance and objectively, when somebody says something, they're kind of right. You know, I didn't handle this particularly well. Or sometimes they say something that it causes you to pause and you say, yeah, maybe they're onto something. So I found it to be very constructive at times. I don't get on it much anymore just because, like I said, I just don't think people really care on Twitter. I don't think it's a great platform for really evaluating much of anything anymore. But during the game, no, I have no clue what's going on social media during a game. But you know, I will occasionally check my phone. I've got two daughters as a single father. And then there's people who like people that I respect that will reach out and say, you know, maybe offer something. You say, oh man, that's a good point about this particular game. But, what you don't want to see is somebody say, hey, you're trending on Twitter. You say, oh, what did I say? You know, what happened? But no, I think most people are kind of over social media.
Over social media.
Well, I mean, not in that sense. I mean, in terms of how does it impact your job?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because no matter what you say, I mean, I'm definitely aware of every, you know, I'm aware of what I'm saying. I'm aware of, okay, I said this, as anyone is that has a mic in front of their face, that, okay, I said this, how's this going to be misconstrued or whatever? But it can't paralyze you. And if you know you said something and the intentions were good, you know, and somebody wants to take that and turn it into something else, I don't have time for that nonsense. So I don't worry about it.
But you like Instagram, right, Troy?
I do love Instagram. And the reason I got to Instagram initially was because I got tired of all the commentary on Facebook, and you know, I just wanted to see a picture and say, okay, hey, cool, this person's off doing this is awesome, without all the commentary. But Twitter, or excuse me, Instagram, it there's enough commentary on that too, you know. I mean,
this guy is he's a media mogul now, promoting a new beer. I've never seen anybody, there's the Kardashians do not use Instagram more than Troy Aikman. So I don't want to hear it. As far as Twitter's concerned, you know, there's only so many times you can hear, oh, you suck, you hate the Giants, you hate the Red Sox, you hate the Packers, you hate the... And eventually, it's just repetition, and it's just more and more. And, you know, it lives over there. Sometimes it drives me crazy when real writers get lazy and report something that gets some reaction on Twitter. Everything gets a reaction on Twitter, and then it becomes kind of a clickbait thing. So, you know, that with that being said, it is not an easy time to start fresh. And, you know, I tried to do that at Fox with covering the U.S. Open, and the golf community is a very protective, like, you need to really earn your stripes to be able to talk about the U.S. Open or you know, whatever it may be. And so it's a hard time to start. And that's why I said that, you know, whoever I was standing next to, Greg Olson, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Tony Romo, there's so many things that go into being a good team. Just an awareness of when the other person wants to talk, reading body language and knowing that they want to go, them reading yours and knowing you're not finished. And it just... all that unspoken stuff that gets built up over 20 years, I wanted to continue that if I could. And thankfully, you know, that came to pass because Fox let me out of the last year of my deal.
So it was much easier to do the Manning cast with golf than it was Fox, the U.S. Open with golf. Right,
yes,
Joe?
Because you could kind of, I could have guests like you on and Troy on and Will Arnett on and joke around, and it wasn't as serious. But man, you say one thing a little off in the golf world, as much as golf dominates my mind about I don't want to say 24/7, but 22/7.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I love the game. I love playing it. I get obsessed with it. But yeah, it's just something different when you broadcast it, and you're doing it at Fox, a new network, and what have you.
Joke, you got to come play in New York with me sometime.
Well, we were in the same field at the Big Daddy golf tournament one time, but we didn't play together.
I was there this year. You didn't make it this year, were you?
No, no, yeah. I didn't make it.
Lightning doubt this year.
Well, good thing.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Adam. Number 30 podcast presents the longest game. In the spring of 1981, the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Rochester Red Wings met for a minor league game. Over the course of 33 innings, the two teams would make history. This episode features archival sound and accidental treasure trove of the game's play-by-play broadcast and interviews with those who experienced it firsthand. Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. ESPN fantasy football experts Field Yates, Stefania Bell, Mike Clay, and Daniel Dopp provide all the information you need to draft your fantasy football team for this season. Expert analysis, debates, and news and notes each weekday on Fantasy Focus Football. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. What will it be like for you guys when the Super Bowl is played this year on Fox and you sit back to watch the game?
It'll be like any other year that we haven't called the game. You know, I usually have a party, a Super Bowl party at my house. It's a big event. You know, it's a national holiday, for crying out loud. But yeah, it'll be good. You know, I mean, we know all those guys, of course. The crew stays the same outside of Kevin and Greg, and wish those guys well. Think a lot of both of them, and it's just the way that it works. I think the way I've kind of looked at it, Adam, is that so we called the game in Miami right before the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
and so we would have obviously been calling the game this year and two out of the next 3 years, and now we get it in 5 years. So there's going to be a big gap. You know, we were used to doing the Super Bowl every 3 years from when we first started at Fox 20 years ago, and now when we do the game on ESPN. It will have been 8 years, I guess, from when we last called the Super Bowl. So there's a big gap there.
Wow.
It'll be the same for me. I mean, I root for all those guys. You know, we're dear friends with Richie Zients and Rich Russo, the producer and the director, and Rich Gross. Yes, we had three people named Rich, all which made it easy for us. And all those guys. And gals, and obviously it's well documented our friendship with Aaron Andrews, and I'll be rooting for those guys. But we've done it. It's not like it's, oh my God, those guys are calling the Super Bowl. I wish. I mean, honestly, when the Super Bowl, with the pressure that's involved, and I got a talking to from my former boss about this, because I was talking a lot about it the last time we did it in Miami. Like, hey, it's fun to call a Super Bowl. There's no doubt, but it is. That's as intense as broadcasting gets. It's in front of 110 million people, and you make a mistake there, it's you don't ever live it down. So there, it is a high wire act, and you don't know what it's like until you sit in that chair and put that headset on and go, damn, I'm calling this game for 100 million people. So I'm happy to go to a Super Bowl party, drink beers, throw stuff against the wall if the team I might have put a dollar on isn't winning, and critique the broadcast. That's the way, and watch the commercials. That all that stuff will be fun.
You can come to mind, but you can't throw anything against the wall. So.
What is that like to feel that pressure when you're sitting in a booth for both of you, knowing that there are 100+ million people watching? And if you were to make a mistake, obviously people would be tweeting about it.
Yeah, I don't know how you could describe it to anybody. It's like the age old, you know, whatever you do, don't look down. You know, somebody puts a hot plate down, you know, hey, this plate's really hot, so don't touch it. And the first thing you do is touch it, or the first thing you look down. You have to guard against feeling overwhelmed by the size of the audience. It shouldn't be any different than any other game you've done, but you can't. That's not realistic. So it is, you know, Kevin and Greg won't know what that's like until they go through it and they do it. And then they'll go, okay, now I get it. But there's a lot of pressure involved. It's not crazy. You can't, you know, it's exciting too, but there's a lot there, and I'm happy. I was happy to do it every 3 years. I wouldn't want to do it every year.
Is there anything that you could take from playing in a Super Bowl, Troy, and apply it to broadcasting a Super Bowl? Because really, if you make a mistake in a Super Bowl, you make a play that people remember. It's right. Probably not all that different from making a broadcasting flub in a Super Bowl.
Well, that's right. And you know, people would tend to remember more the mistake by the player that maybe cost you the Super Bowl. I mean, that's impacting the outcome of a game. Whereas for us, I mean, we're impacting, I guess, the enjoyment for a viewer in how we present it. But we're not affecting, regardless of what we say, the outcome of the game. But yeah, a lot of similarities in that you want your best work to be when the games matter most. And so, you know, I was saying earlier today that I think that's, I don't want to speak for Joe, but it's what I'm most proud of in our 20 years. We've called a lot of big games. We've called a lot of Super Bowls, a lot of playoff games, a lot of NFC championship games. And I feel like we were at our best when we were calling the biggest games. And that's a nice legacy to leave. And it's the legacy that I felt that I had as a player. So I think there are a lot of similarities.
As we get ready to kick off the season on Monday night, September 12th on ESPN, Broncos at Seahawks, is there one thing this season, a storyline, a team, a player, a trend, anything that you're looking forward to seeing more than another?
The one thing that pops into my mind right now, it's not, you know, all that glamorous or sexy or quite – to your question, but I'm just bullish on Indianapolis this year. I like Matt Ryan. I Joe knows, you know, when we've called his games, I think he's a heck of a player. I think those that have played the game at quarterback appreciate what he can do and still do and what he's done. And I just feel that I think he's going to really help that team. I like Frank Reich. I like their running game. I just think Indianapolis, and I don't want to say it could surprise some people, but I think they have a chance to be a contender. Beyond that, you know how it is. You cover it better than anybody, Adam, that there's so many storylines or so many things that come in and out during the season, and it's all fantastic. I mean, it's just going to be a fun year. We can't wait.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, there's a few things that jump to mind. I mean, I can't believe that Devontae Adams got out of Green Bay. And so, you know, he and Aaron Rodgers were special. And I thought it was going to be kind of a package deal. So how do they fill in for that? How do they overcome that? And I really think they have to overcome that. And somebody's going to have to grow and somebody's going to have to surprise. Same with Tyreek Hill in Kansas City. You know, these are major weapons that clear out a lot of space and put up a lot of big numbers, and those numbers have to be replaced somehow, some way. Who wins the NFC East? They haven't had a repeat winner in that division, oddly enough, for 17 years. That's crazy to even believe. But, you know, Philadelphia might be the team to beat. in that division when everybody says Cowboys, Cowboys, Cowboys. Now with all the injuries and the way their offseason went, they have some question marks. So, I mean, you can go on and on and on. Does Josh Allen take the next step? Is he the guy representing the AFC in the Super Bowl? There's so many fun things to talk about, and each week, you know, it's what keeps you employed. It's what keeps us walking in the booth with a smile on our faces, like, all right, what are we about to see? And, you know, what's everybody going to be talking about for the next week to come? And I love that. I love that feeling. And I think you only get that in the NFL.
Joe, you bring up the Cowboys, the Cowboys, the Cowboys. And Troy, it has been so long since the Cowboys have won a Super Bowl. What the hell is going on there? That it's been so long for not winning a championship, being largely irrelevant in the playoffs, and they're still continuing to be America's team and all the talk and all the conversation about them.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam, I saw your post earlier today on Instagram, and, you know, we lost Ernie Zampezi, my offensive coordinator, and he was the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys the last time that a Super Bowl was won, back in 1995. And since that time, you know, the Cowboys haven't even played in an NFC championship game. Three playoff wins since 2000, third fewest in the league. You know, it's just not how the Cowboys were built. It's not the history of the Cowboys. It's not why they became America's team. Everybody understands that. I think the, you know, kind of the crazy part about it is we talk about how little they've done in the postseason, but yet in the regular season, they're up near the top in victories and wins, but it just hasn't translated into January. And for a lot of franchises, maybe that would be something to hang your hat on and be proud of. But I like the fact that for this organization, they're judged on Super Bowl victories and not playoff appearances or playoff wins for that matter. But nobody really knows the answer. I mean, last year I thought they were a really good team. I thought they had a lot of chemistry. I thought there was a lot of good things going on, 12-5. But I knew San Francisco was going to be a really tough game for them, and they didn't play their best football. And unfortunately for the Cowboys, twice they've been the number one seed in the NFC, and both times they lost in the divisional round after a first round bye. So they haven't taken advantage of the opportunity. So you say, okay, well, how do you fix that? Well, nobody knows. Nobody has that answer. If somebody had the answer, then they'd get beyond that and they'd get to the Super Bowl. But I know that there's no one who wants to do it more than the owner, Jerry Jones. And I think this, I don't think this team's as good on paper as they were a year ago, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean, they are very capable of winning it all, but it's a long season when you're judged based on postseason. I've been there as a player. It takes a lot of the enjoyment out of the regular season, but that's where they are.
Before I let you go, I just want to know, if I drink 8 beer, Troy, will I get veins in my arms like yours that are visible on the screen?
Yeah, if you eat vegetables too. I mean, come on. You can't, you know.
So I eat vegetables and wash it down with 8 beer, right? Like, then we're set. You know, see, Joe's got the veins. Look.
Yes. Can you promote this podcast with that right there with a can of 8 beer? I mean,
like, how old are you right now?
I'm 55.
Yeah, okay, so we're the same age. 55-year-old men are not supposed to have arms, forgive me for noticing, that look like that with veins bulging out, Troy, looking as good as they do on your body. That's unbelievable.
Well, I say thank you. I know you're half serious, half joking.
No, I'm serious.
In the last couple of years, I mean, I've gotten really, really, I don't like the word strict. I've gotten really disciplined in what I'm eating. I cut out dairy. I don't eat carbs. I drink a gallon and a half of water every day, and I feel great. So, you know, we talked about Ernie Zampezi. Joe and I were talking earlier. Life is short, you know, and I'm trying to extend it as long as I can.
That's pretty impressive that you've done all that dietarily wise. Joe, you've done the same? You cut out carbs, Joe?
Hell no. No. I mean, I want to live. You just said life is short. The way I take that is stuff your face, drink, smoke cigars.
Eat pizza.
I haven't cut out carbs completely. I consume carbs 2.6 grams at a time. That's what we have.
Here we go.
There you go. I couldn't imagine a diet when you say no dairy, no carbs. That means for me, no pizza. I don't know. I don't think I could do it.
That's been the hardest thing. I'll be honest. Pizza is pizza is my cheat meal, but haven't had it. Haven't had it in a while.
You know what we got to do? We got to put a load of pizzas in the Monday night truck. So that we get done with the game. We go, I want to see Troy, how tempted he is.
Well, they asked us, what do you guys like at halftime? And Troy is the one that answered the email. He's like, baked chicken with broccoli and carrots. I'm like, will you shut up? How about a hot dog and some pizza and some chicken fingers?
I'm with you, Joe. That sounds a lot better than the baked chicken and vegetables.
Like, do that for one, and then the rest of us can eat what we should eat at a game.
Hey guys, I want to thank you very much. Look forward to working with you guys this year. We will see you in Seattle for the opening Monday night game, Denver at Seattle. Should be awesome. Congratulations, welcome to the team, and thank you for the time today.
Appreciate you, pal.
Yeah, great to be on your team.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispest, cheesiest Detroit style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jets Pizza, better because it has to be. Great broadcasters and great men. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, really looking forward to working together with them this season. And now a man getting ready for the start of this season, the Bengals offensive coordinator, Brian Callahan. Brian.
Adam, how are you?
How are you doing?
I'm great.
How we feel about getting ready for here? All right, first of all, nice to meet you, Fish. I don't think we've actually met.
No, not maybe in passing briefly, but yeah, not any length of time.
Which is odd to me because you're a lifer in this.
Yeah.
And I've been in this for 32 years. So it was kind of weird to me. And it was one of the reasons that I reached out. I'm like, you know what? I want to get Brian on the podcast. I want to talk to him, get a feel for him. And that's one of the reasons that I like to do this podcast, is because I get to meet people like yourself who are lifers, who have been involved in the sport all their life, who know so much about it and are so respected. And I get a chance to formally meet them in a setting like this.
Awesome. I'm excited to do it.
Now, Brian, what was it like for you to grow up the son of a coach, particularly somebody who became a head coach in the National Football League, the great Bill Callahan? Because people speak about him in reverential ways, and everywhere he's been, the offensive line play, the run game has always been outstanding. Yep. He's coached in a lot of different places. You followed that all along, right? What was it like to grow up in a basically laboratory of coaching?
It was great for me. If you enjoyed football, which I did, it's about as good a way as you can. I mean, I spent by the time I was probably 10 or 11, I was at training camp, hanging around my dad and spending time there and being around the equipment room. I worked in the equipment room when I was in high school. So you get it. You grow up a little bit when you do things like that. I was in meetings. I followed him everywhere. I go in the offseason OTAs. I was just constantly around. And to have that sort of access, I didn't take it for granted. I really enjoyed it. And I got a chance to meet a lot of really great players. And I had a chance to be around great coaches. I was sitting in NFL meetings by the time I was 14. And so these things are not new to me. You know, I've been around it for a long time now. And I wasn't partaking as a coach or an assistant or anything like that. But I certainly learned a lot. But at the end of the day, it was probably the biggest moment for me to spend time with my dad. You know, he's gone a lot. And so if I wanted to go spend time with him, I'd have to go. And thankfully, I was able to follow him to work. And so hung out at the complexes everywhere he ever went.
And who were some of those people that made a mark on you when you're hanging around facilities, sitting in on meetings around some great players and coaches? Anybody stand out to you, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, Rich Gannon was the one that probably stood out the most. I mean, I was in high school by the time that we were in Oakland, and he was just such a unique person to watch. And he was such a fun player to watch play on Sundays, just like he was so accurate and he was such a master of that system that it was really fun to see. He was demanding. He was hard on guys, which was, you know, as it was fun to watch that as a high school quarterback, trying to learn how to be a quarterback. And I took a lot watching Rich for a long time. And he was great to me too. He was very helpful. I'd ask him questions. He'd answer all the questions I'd have. And it was great. I learned a lot.
How were you as a high school quarterback?
Probably about dead average. I tried to be good. I went to a really competitive high school out in California, De La Salle High School. We were really good. I played behind a guy named Matt Gutierrez most of my high school career, who ended up going to Michigan and playing in the league for a little bit. He was really talented, but I was kind of the scrappy backup walk-on type, and I was good enough to play probably at some other public high schools. I was probably a very, like I said, average high school quarterback. But I worked really hard, and I think that took me a long way. But I ended up walking on at UCLA and earned a scholarship there.
Huh. And what was your first coaching break?
My first coaching break was in 2010 in Denver. I was a graduate assistant at UCLA for 2 years after I played there, which was great. We had an unbelievable staff there. Of coaches that I learned a lot from. A lot of guys: Eric Bieniemy, John Embry, Carl Durrell, Tom Cable. Wow. It was an all-star staff, if you ask me. Looking back on it now, a lot of guys that have been head coaches. And so that was kind of my first coaching job. And then I coached high school for 2 years, which was probably the best thing for me at the time. And so I was coaching in high school when I had a chance to interview in Denver for a quality control job.
What did you learn from high school that helped you that you believe is so important?
You learn how to teach, you know. You learn how to teach. My first job was I was the freshman football offensive coordinator. And I had kids that never even put pads on before. And so you really forces you to refine how you teach, you know, guys that didn't even know what a 3-point stance was. And so you had to start from literally ground zero and really be able to communicate those things to kids that have no idea what you're talking about. And so it really forced me to break down how I coach and how I teach and make it and simple and digestible for kids that had never done it before.
And how do you find yourself in Denver? What happens there to go from 2 years in high school coaching to coaching on the Broncos staff?
I had a small connection that allowed me to get an interview. I interviewed a bunch of people. Went through an in-person interview, phone interview, in-person interview. Ended up getting the job, and for Josh McDaniels, his going into his second year there, and that was a baptism by fire for me, you know, going from coaching high school football into that New England Patriots system and way of doing things, and it was the best thing that could have happened to me. It prepared me to be for life in the NFL as a coach, what it takes, what it's required of you, your preparation, and probably ultimately prepared me for being able to work with Peyton when he got there in Denver, that mode of detail and preparation, that no stone unturned type mindset.
So how old were you when you started working with Peyton in Denver?
That would have been in 2000. He got there in 2012. So yep. I was 26, 27.
So what's it like for a 27-year-old to be working with Peyton Manning? And that's got to be a little bit surreal.
Yeah, there was a lot of learning that went into it, you know, learning what he wanted, how he wanted it. Thankfully, you know, I had pretty strong mentors at that time with Mike McCoy and Adam Gase that really helped push my career forward and gave me opportunities to be in that room with the quarterbacks. And it was an invaluable experience, but it was work. I mean, you had to be on it. You were on every time you walked in that room. Every single moment that he had a question, you had to be prepared to have an answer for.
What you learn from Peyton in particular?
The preparation part, you know, how important it is, how and what it really means to prepare. You know, a lot of people can talk about watching tape and preparing for a game and all that. A lot of it gets kind of tossed around, but his intensity at which he went about the preparation part, the years worth of looking at tape, knowing the coordinators, knowing their tendencies, how they played it for, all the things that went into making sure he had all the answers and tools he needed to play successfully in the game. you know, that's a level of preparation I think is pretty rare. There's probably only a handful of guys that prepare the way he did. And then it was just you get a chance to that intensely watch him do walkthroughs and center quarterback exchange, things that seem trivial and aren't, you know, probably as regarded if you watch a normal practice somewhere, but the intensity with which he did every one of those things was pretty remarkable.
So you have a Super Bowl ring from Denver?
I do. Yeah.
That your one Super Bowl ring?
It is my one. I've been to three. I've only got one ring though.
So I would imagine you'd like to add to that ring collection that you probably
have. I would love to. That would be great. Yeah.
How do we feel about the upcoming season here, Brian?
Really good, to be honest. Bunch of young talent, really good quarterback. Our defense has been playing great during camp, and you know, a bunch of guys that have not done it before together. So you get a chance to go back and do it again.
Isn't it amazing how one season and a couple of players really can seemingly turn around an entire vibe and aura surrounding a franchise? Like, people used to think of the Bengals in a certain way.
Yeah.
And now they're one of the upstart teams in the league, a trendy pick,
yep,
somebody that people want to go watch. And it all changed just like that.
Yeah. A lot of that has to do with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase coming in back to back years, you know, young and exciting and guys that are playing at the top of their positions, you know, guys that are probably as good as anybody that's out there. And when you get that going and a couple wins get behind you and all of a sudden the tide turns pretty quickly. It was pretty bleak, dismal first couple of years here, to be honest. So it was a welcome change. But yeah, when you get good young players and you win games, people get behind you when you win. And this is a fan base in a city that's enjoyed the process of getting back there. And so now you got a lot of support and a lot of excitement, and that's a good thing.
When you go through seasons like that, it's not fun. There are a few things that are less enjoyable than a losing football season. What stands out to you about the losing ways in Cincinnati early on?
You know, it really was because we lost some close games. You know, there's some teams that ran us off the field a few times. I mean, Baltimore being one of them, they got us pretty good. Pittsburgh ran us off the field. So your division teams were beating us up that first year. But we had a bunch of guys that were about the right stuff. We just didn't quite have the collective whole collection of talent that it takes to win in the NFL at that point. And I think we've done a really good job of replenishing that both through the draft and free agency here.
You know, Brian, I remember talking to people in Kansas City when they saw Mahomes for the first time and they knew right away what they had, and people in Los Angeles when they had Herbert and they knew what they had. Can you think back to a moment where you saw Joe early on where you said, okay, I know that this guy is going to be really good, and I know the long days that we've had here are going to get better?
Yeah, I think the most, you know, when the draft process was the starting point. You spend all that time watching this tape, and you see everything that you could ever want in a franchise quarterback as far as his play style, his leadership, his toughness. You saw all those things on tape, and to have that show up in the building, really from the minute he got into the building, was him kind of taking over as a personality. But I think his reputation preceded him, so he had kind of earned some respect without ever having to step in the building. So that was fun to see. But I would say the first time that you really saw him take over was probably that first training camp, because the whole offseason was COVID. So we were never really together until training camp started. So that was really a bizarre way for him to start his career. But he came in training camp, and like the first couple practices was just on fire. And he was everything that we thought we were going to get, and it showed up almost immediately. And that was, he won the team over pretty quickly.
Joe Cool. And what about Ja'Marr Chase? Because when he first came in, there were a lot of stories about him dropping passes. That was a big narrative last summer, and it worked out okay for him in his rookie year. I'd say he had the best rookie stats since Randy Moss, yeah, as a rookie wide receiver, and was off the charts. Could you see it in Chase right away also, Brian?
I think you saw his talent, but the drop thing in that first training camp was legitimate. You know, he had dropped a bunch of passes in games. He had dropped some passes in practice that was open to media and fans. And so you saw some things that concerned you at first, but then you saw the rest of his talent. You're like, he'll pull through. He's a little rusty. Had some faith that it was going to come through when it needed to, and it sure did, probably better than I think anybody expected. I knew he was going to be really good. I can't sit here and tell you that I thought he was going to be as productive as he was over the course of the year. It was wildly impressive.
And you've been around the sport a long time. Does he remind you of anybody that you've seen up close or watched?
Oh, you know, I think he's a little bit unique. I wasn't around Anquan Boldin when he was first coming out. I was around Anquan late in his career, but I think if you're comparing just skill set and build, because he's not a huge, he's not real tall. He's not tall and lean. He's built a little bit like a running back. He's got really thick legs. I think he's unique to himself. There's not a lot of guys that have his straight line speed and play strength that can also sink their hips and change direction and get out of cuts and carry the ball and all those things. And he's a really unique player.
So when you go up to the Super Bowl last year and you're facing Matthew Stafford, you have a lot of feelings for, what was that like for you personally to experience that, a guy that you coached, you're now competing with for a Super Bowl ring?
I didn't enjoy part of it necessarily. There was a part of me that was really, really happy for him to finally be able to reach that stage. I've always felt like he was capable of that. I always felt like that was something he deserved to do and have a chance to do. I wish it wasn't against us in that moment, but that's just the way it is. And I knew he was going to compete really hard. He was going to play really well, and he did. It was a little bit mixed feeling. If there was a silver lining in losing the Super Bowl, him getting a chance to have that ring would be it.
And let's be honest, the other quarterback you worked with in Detroit, you have to be very surprised to see Dan Orlovsky on TV doing the analysis he does today, right, Brian? I mean, you got to be really surprised at that.
I am actually not surprised one bit. There's nobody that likes to debate and talk about football more than Dan, and does a great job at it too. But Dan was actually a huge part of my early career. Just he helped me a ton, just because he had been around for so long and had seen so many different things, and really had a good feel for locker room scheme. And he was a big part of my early career, helping me get settled, get my feet underneath me as a young quarterback's coach.
Now, have you ever worked on the same staff with your father? You haven't in the NFL, have you?
No, I've never worked with him. Always would never have turned it down if the opportunity arose, but it just never really lined up that way for us, and he was very adamant early in my career to start it on my own and not for my first job as a graduate assistant at UCLA, not at Nebraska with my dad. And he said I could work there if I wanted to, but he had recommended that I do it on my own and not get a job. My career started with him, be started on my own. Now, certainly I understand that my last name has helped me over the years, but he's never given me a job, nor have I ever worked for him.
Could that still happen at some point in time, that you would wind up working with your father on the same staff? Could that be?
Yeah. This business is wild, and you never know how those things shake out. He seems to still be enjoying coaching football, and I know he really enjoys coaching in Cleveland and working for Coach Stefanski up there. And so, if there was ever an opportunity that we could, I would certainly explore it, just because he's I think he's the best at what he does.
Is it odd to have to face him twice a year?
Yeah, a little bit.
What's that like in a week like that, where you're playing the Browns?
It was strange at first. I've gotten used to it a little bit now. It's been 2 years of it, but the first year was strange, just because you spend your whole life as a coach, as a kid, you're kind of your dad's biggest fan. You're the team that he works for is a team that you support. You kind of live it and breathe it, and yeah. And then even from afar, in the years that we weren't, we played each other over time, but we didn't play each other a lot, and you still root for him. I still root for my dad and for success. It's just really weird to have his success and my success intertwined at a point where neither one of us really wants the other one to win, for the sake of our teams and organizations and all that. So it's a little weird, but the fun part is we get a chance to have dinner and catch up and talk, and we spend a lot of time apart just by the nature of the job. And so it's a nice time for us to get together and hang out pregame or go to dinner the night before or something like that.
So you will be able to do that, right? The game doesn't come up, right? You don't talk about that at all.
No, we very rarely talk shop about our teams. He's always been probably my biggest sounding board for advice, and which is still always going to be the case. But we kind of just keep our team's business about as separate as we can, just out of respect for the we're in the division and we work for two different organizations and that compete directly against each other. So we try to be mindful of that, but things that we share between ourselves kind of stay between us when it's those such conversations come up. But for the most part, We don't talk much about, you know, each other's ongoings, unless it's more of a coaching or personal question when it comes to that. So we do a good job of keeping it professional, I guess, is the best way to put it.
And Brian, before I let you go, we're about 10 days out of the opener as we tape this. You're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. How deep are we into preparations for that opening game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and what that game, and what is that game going to be like?
It's going to be a battle. You know, those guys are it's a proud team, proud franchise, and we got the best of them last year. I'm sure they're looking to make up for that this year. They got a ton of talent all the way across the board. They're breaking in some new stuff on offense. They're good. It's a good football team, and there's probably not many coaches I have more respect for than what Mike Tomlin's done there over his career. So, it's going to be a typical AFC North divisional clash to open the season, which is fun. And the way this new training camp schedule has worked out has allowed us to kind of slowly introduce the Pittsburgh stuff. We don't go too crazy. We'll get a little bit of work on it tomorrow and Thursday, take a little break and come back and jump right into it. So
you bring up Pittsburgh and Cleveland, just reminds me of a conversation that I'll lead with last year. Remember after you guys lit up one of your division opponents and had the kind of performance that you did throughout the course of the year, I remember somebody telling me that the teams in the AFC North now have to tailor their drafts to stop the Bengals' offensive attack that you're putting together, by the way, which is kind of interesting to think that these other teams have to draft to slow you guys down.
That's always the idea. If you're building an offense, you want people to have some fear of what you're capable of doing. And I think that our guys have put it on tape and they've done it. We got great players. And now we get a chance to go try to do it again. And we got a lot of continuity.
I appreciate you finally taking the time. It's nice to finally get the chance to talk to you. I truly appreciate that and your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Enjoyed it.
And there is the respected offensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, Brian Callahan, as he takes some time out of his schedule and the preparations for the regular season opener against the Pittsburgh Steelers. We thank him very much for his time. And now as we get ready for the start of the season, there are fans across the country all getting ready for their fantasy football drafts. Now we taped a fantasy cheat sheet special, which is available on ESPN Plus, where there are players that we've listed that you should be drafting ahead of their ADP, average draft position. It's a guide that hopefully people can use and find some success with during the draft. But again, it's a little bit of a cheat sheet for everybody involved in fantasy football drafts, available on ESPN Plus. And to complement that, we usually have Pete Bomarito of Bomarito Performance Systems, which is a training facilities in Fort Lauderdale, Miami. He usually comes on at this time of the year, but because we had all these guests, we got some cliff notes from Pete Bomarito about some of the players that he's trained during the offseason that he believes are poised to have big year. And he said this year's rookie guarantee from Pete Bomarito of Bomarito Performance Systems is the Packers wide receiver, Christian Watson, not Romeo Dubs, but Christian Watson. He wrote, "The combination of elite size and incredible speed. Never seen a wide receiver this tall, this fast. Haven't been this excited about an incoming wide receiver since Stephon Diggs." So high praise there for Christian Watson. Other wide receiver that he's very high on, rookie, Velus Jones Jr., rookie with the Bears. Pete wrote, "Built like a tank, looks like a running back, and run like a two when he gets the ball. Will be dynamic as a rookie wide receiver and return specialist. Runs a 4.31 40 at the combine. Speed surprised people, and he literally plays that fast. The strength in and out of his breaks is as good as it gets." He's also big on the Rams wide receiver, Allen Robinson, another wide receiver he trained during the offseason. He wrote, "Best offseason he's had with training, and he'll explode in the Rams offense." He trained Michael Carter and Aaron Jones and writes about Carter, "I know he was my sleeper last year. This year, he'll be even better. If the Jets offense overall puts it together, he'll have Pro Bowl stats." And Aaron Jones, he writes, "will get more opportunities. And he actually looks faster now than he ever has, which I didn't even think was possible." So some ringing endorsements for Christian Watson, Velus Jones Jr., Allen Robinson, Mike Carter, Aaron Jones. We'll see how that works out from Pete Bomarito of Bomarito Performance Systems. We appreciate him and his fantasy insights. And we mentioned fantasy drafts. Fantasy drafts, that may be one of the most exciting days of the year. I have both my drafts Wednesday, September 7th, one at 5:30, one at 8, and everybody is looking for an edge. There's nothing like that draft day, nothing like it. And just last week, got a message on Instagram from one Henry Hasselbeck, the son of Matthew Hasselbeck, the nephew of Tim Hasselbeck, and both Hasselbeck brothers share a team in the famed ESPN War Room League, fantasy football league with 16 teams. And Henry shot me a direct message on Instagram and said, top five wide receivers out of nowhere. This was last Saturday at night. And I said, in the NFL or in fantasy? And he said, fantasy wise. Also, what would you say is the best scoring defense? To which I said, what number is your dad in the War Room draft? Because this will be just like Matthew and Tim to put Henry up to direct message me to try to get some information about the War Room League draft that I don't want to reveal before we make our picks on Wednesday, September 7th. And Henry responded, sir, this is for personal information in my own league. He is the least of your concerns, meaning his father, Matthew. So I shared with him my top wide receivers for the year. And obviously he doesn't feel that strongly about his father's fantasy prowess. So according to Henry Hasselbeck, we should not be worried about the Hasselbeck team in the War Room League draft this year. We'll see how that plays out. But fantasy football drafts coming this upcoming week, along with the start of the regular season and the debut of Monday Night Football. It is all coming together. It is a glorious time of the year, and we look forward to all this happening. We want to thank our guests, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, as they get ready to embark upon their new career at ESPN in the first Monday Night Football game of the season, Denver at Seattle, Monday night, September 12th. We want to thank the offensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, Brian Callahan, as he gets ready for his opener against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I want to thank my great producers, Christina Buswell and Sarah Abbott, for putting this podcast together. And I want to thank you, the listener, for tuning into another Adam Schefter podcast. Hope everybody enjoys the start of the season. Have a great week. Be well and stay safe.